I don't know the word. You're evil to the core. You're as smelly as a skunk. I don't know the rest of the words, and I know you're recording it.
Season's greetings.
Yes.
Welcome to episode 10 of the SFO Drifters podcast.
This is Christmas in April, not July.
April?
No, maybe not.
No, we're in April.
I know, but I'm saying Christmas. Forget
it's Christmas
it.
In summer.
Christmas in spring. It's not summer till the June.
Until the June. Whatever.
The month of June.
In any case.
Yes.
Welcome to the SFO Drifters podcast. I'm your host, Captain Ben. And with me, Tim Murphy.
That's right. We're a duet tonight.
What? No, that was a solo.
No, but the podcast is we're a duet because our trio is down to a duo.
Yes, indeed. Noel Garcia is on a
leave of absence with his lady friend.
Yeah. He's on a leave of absence. He got on the love boat. Actually, the love train. He actually found out that he could get to Tampa faster if he takes the Amtrak.
Oh, and then on his way, he's saying, te amo, me love you, mi amor, all the way up there and whispering sweet nothings into his phone while she falls asleep.
Don't say that.
Oh, sorry.
That's awkward. Wrong? No, it's not wrong. It's just awkward because I could actually imagine him doing it.
Yeah, I could see that.
And
that's because he is doing it. That's why we can imagine it.
And it's disturbing, too.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, well, hey.
But he's up there. He's enjoying himself, I'm sure.
I'm sure he is.
Live action. There's that. Also, Paul Murphy, your brother.
Yes.
He moved up north.
Yes, the Yeti.
So where exactly did he move? I heard he moved to West Palm?
No, he's in Boynton Beach with his wife. They have a nice apartment up there. That's where she lived. She lived up there with her brother, and the three of them live up there. So it's Paul, his wife, and her brother. But her brother's a Fort Lauderdale police officer, so he's rarely home.
Uh-huh.
And he's a really cool guy. So it's not even like – it's not a big deal. He's kind of goofball like I am. So
I hope it's not a small apartment.
No, it's a decent size two-bedroom, two-bath apartment. It's decent. Okay. And like I said, it's in a nice area. I think their biggest problem is that they have so many cars because Paul has his work car, his personal car, and then, all that other fun stuff.
Yeah. And what you been up to?
Just still working on the garage, work, doing the firefighter thing. That's been fun. Actually applied at Hialeah, so that'll be interesting if I get hired on the Hialeah Fire Department because I don't speak Spanish. No hablo español. But I'll just say aquí. No.
Yeah, this is gonna be awkward when you're out on the field and you gotta direct somebody to kind of help them, and it's like,
well, see,
they don't understand you.
What's good about the fire department is you're never alone. So there's always two or three guys there with you. So it won't be an issue. And they're a really good department. So hopefully it works out and I'll be right around the corner from you.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
If you need help, slip and fall, just give me a call.
Oh, hey, gosh.
I'll be out the door.
I'll just walk down the street and be like, hey, Timmy, how are you?
I'll say, hi, how you doing? I'm over at the fire department. But, yeah, so just working on the garage, got the conduit run in the backyard, which kind of sucked. It was about 110 foot of digging a trench in the backyard, burying the conduit for the electric. So hopefully tomorrow, we got the electric coming out here, we can get an idea of what we're going to need, get that tapped in. And I'm really, really hoping to have my cars in working in there in about 2 to 3 weeks. So I should be getting a lift soon and a welder. So, yeah, that's about it.
Interesting.
That's my life. That and, you know, King of Caroline, USDC, and all that other exciting stuff that we do.
Yes. You know,
what about you, though? You're always asking about us, but you never mention what you've been up to.
Well, actually, I was going to mention something, and I've sort of been having some inner demons. Demons, there we go.
Like that?
The word, yeah, whatever.
So speak to me. Let me hear what you have.
That I've been finding, because apparently I've been getting complaints from people that I'm either mean or not nice. I'm too hard on them. And
yeah, but see, you're hard on people because you love them. They're your friends. But
apparently, I guess it gets to a point where it's a bit too much. And even I myself notice it too, where it's like, oh man,
I think I have to. I said, man, you might want to make sure you know that you're just joking with them. Anybody you want to apologize to since you have this?
I'm not going to put, you know, names put it out
okay.
there.
Okay, that makes sense.
Don't I'm not going to put it out there, but.
But yeah. Those to whom it may concern, you don't mean any harm, and
I don't. But after hearing it a couple of times, I just decided to just shut it completely off.
You just gotta throttle back. It's like throttle control, just like drifting. It's like drifting.
Yeah. But I'm gonna lift off completely. I've just decided. I'm just tired of
Okay.
People complaining and I'm like burr, 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 burr.
Oh, this is a somber note.
Now that I think about it, this is sort of like an insult to them, if me mocking them, so I'm sorry again.
This is like an intervention.
Sort of.
Oh, wow.
Except with just one person.
But that's all it takes. Well, no, we got Kira here, snoring.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like a person-dog thing.
I guess.
Maybe.
I guess.
So anyhow, let's move on.
Let's get the show going. Got our personal issues out of the way.
Yes, they are gone.
Yes. Actually, the first important thing that I want to talk about is Formula D.
Yeah, it was a good first round, except for so I missed the qualifying. So I've heard it was pretty painful to watch. So I'll let you go ahead and talk about the qualifying first.
Yeah. So the thing about the qualifying was, this time around they changed it this year. Mm-hmm. And the way how they changed it was they had the pros going out first, unlike before where they had like the low guys and the rookies go out and then they would move up all the way over to the pros and so forth.
Right.
So out of the gate you had Daigo Saito and he did a pretty good run. He didn't really sandbag it or
now people want to score on their first run, score high, so they can make the top 16.
Exactly. Lock themselves into the top 16 slots.
And then they don't have to run. If they make it themselves in the top 16 after the first round, those top 16 don't run again, correct?
No, they don't.
Okay.
And there was some criticism about that. It has its ups and downs, and one of the ups is obviously that you're locked in for the competition for the next day. But the other issue is that, let's say, for instance, if you you qualify 15 and you finish at 15, like you're locked in the 15th spot. That's it. You're locked in. You can't go for another run and kind of move up another slot.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate, obviously, for the people that, don't necessarily score high enough, but still get into the top 16. But
whatever.
In any case. So they had that going and the pros did what they usually do. They perform how they usually did. Mm-hmm. There was no surprise there,
right?
But when it came down to actually the rookies, you could just definitely tell there were rookies.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is like Nate Hamilton. We've seen him in Pro Am just do great.
Yeah,
and it just was from what you told me and what other people said. It was just garbage. It's like how do you?
Well, the thing is. Well, for me, it was not only the sight of seeing like the pros, and the next thing you know, the rookies come out and seeing such a disparity between them, such a difference between them that was so noticeable. It was shocking. I mean, I didn't really see that much last year.
Right. Yeah, because you had some of the Jeremy guys, Lowe, and he went all out, and Pat Gooden, and these are guys that were either first or second year in that are, for the most part, rookies. Even Pat Gooden's first rookie year, he didn't do that.
Yeah.
Or Jeremy Lowe. Jeremy Lowe went balls out.
Yeah.
So you think you were afraid of wrecking their cars, or do you think there was a pressure?
It wasn't just that. It was like, for instance, some of the cars from the rookies, like, there was like one or two cars that the car was breaking up. It was making no power whatsoever. It was like, it was so bad that some of the guys like would just drive by. They wouldn't even drift. And it was like back to back.
So it's almost like just parade lap.
Yeah, it was. I kid you not. And it even got to the point where Jared, the announcer, he was like, come on, guys. You got to drift here. Hello.
Yeah.
I mean, if it even got to the point where Jared had to say something about it from where he's standing.
And he doesn't usually have anything not to say.
Yeah. If it got to a point, I mean, come on, it's that bad.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it either. And
hopefully it's not like that because we're heading up to a road trip up to Road Atlanta. I really hope it's not like that.
You know, the Noel, who was in the chat box, I was talking to him, and he was saying, he mentioned that I shouldn't be so harsh on the rookies, considering how it's the first time, and Long Beach is a very difficult track.
No, that's the thing is, I disagree with that, because these guys competing in a pro-am, if they can't even drift half the track, it's not fair, because there are a lot of deserving drivers out there.
Yeah,
that would go out there and give it their all, whether their car, it wouldn't matter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, actually, just watching them, the rookies, fill it up, like, it just made me think how there's some of the guys that we know locally who we know they do great.
Right.
And if you put them in any sort of situation, they'll figure it out.
Right.
And I mean, it's frustrating for me to see something like that.
It's like a blown opportunity. You're watching somebody blow an opportunity.
Exactly. Like, I'm just thinking about it as if I'm getting frustrated about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how frustrated, like, a guy who's good at, you know, at driving and has his own car that
be like, that man, I should be out there doing this. These guys aren't even qualifying.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a harsh thing. I don't think you're being harsh at all, because in all reality, there are, from what I heard, some sanctioning bodies that really shouldn't be sanctioning drivers or like giving out licenses.
Bold statement. Careful.
It is. From what I heard, there's a track over in California, I believe, Willow Springs. They used a figure eight or something small. Uh-huh. They said it's not much bigger than our skid pad, and they're doing pro-am licensing out of there. So that, hearing that, I'm definitely going to try to push for drift sessions to be able to do pro-am licensing, because King County Line, it's not the best track in the world, but we have 65 mile. We have entries. It does take some effort to compete there. And not only that, is there's a good 10 to 15 cars that you got to go against that it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy competition. It's not going to be a walk in the park. Even though the track isn't like the hardest and most technical in the world, the fact that a lot of these guys have driven it for so long and know the track so well is going to make that much harder to get for second or third.
Yeah, definitely. So. But going back to the qualifying, you actually brought up Nate Hamilton, who I'm sure a lot of people were like looking up to him. Looking at him to see like, oh, all right, here's Nate Hamilton. There's a lot of hype around this guy, and
he was killing it in pro-am.
Yeah, and so everybody had high expectations of him. I'm sure most people did. And what he ended up doing out there was like, seriously? Come on.
Yeah, it was like something that's never really, almost from what he, like, then again, I haven't seen this, but from what you're saying, it's almost like somebody, their first or second event.
Yeah. No, for me, it was mostly being let down.
Mm-hmm.
Considering how there's a lot of hype around this guy, those high expectations.
Right.
And
like rookie of the year talking. Some people were talking like, oh, he might be rookie of the year, the way how good he was doing.
Uh-huh. But he just filled it up. And not to mention the car that he was doing it with, that he filled it up in. I mean, that car is pretty pro level from what I know of.
Yeah, from right now too.
So there's really no excuses for what happened, in my opinion.
We'll see. Hopefully, like I said, we don't see a repeat of that. So anyway, so that was the qualifying. Now, coming the day of the event, we got our top 32. My opinion, I'm going to give my opinion overall of what I thought of the event watching it.
Okay.
They're always organized. You know, they've been doing it for 9 years, but apparently now it's 10 years.
It's just weird how they're saying it, which is kind of a little annoying.
Like, this is the ninth year, and next year is the 10th year, so they're...
But they keep switching it up. Like, they say that, 10 years of drifting, but they also say the 10th season of drifting. And they say all these things, but it's like, I look at their little one of the little graphics that they made where it has 10 years and the first starting number is the year 2004. Now, if my math is correct,
that's 9.
From 2004 to 2013, that's 9.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Anyways, so okay, so looking from the outside in, being an event organizer, I can imagine the stuff they have to struggle with and they have to organize. They have.
Let me just put it out there.
Go ahead.
I know you. Mm-hmm. Your biggest pet peeve, your biggest gripe with the event is how much downtime there is.
Yes. Yeah, I was getting to that. I was definitely getting to that. But
I'm sorry, but
it's true. It's true. But anyways, they have a lot of technology. It seems like they're trying to figure out some new things, try out new things, which is good. I think that's important to try out new things because certain things you don't know until you try whether it's going to succeed or fail. So that being said, that makes things more difficult and have a lot more people. But yes, the downtime. When we did USDC, one of the things we were talking about is when you have downtime, the spectator is going to go away and you really want to have some action going. And that's what's cool about having a solo and tandem competitions because there's always something going on. With the spectators, you want to keep them engaged. It just seems like Formula Drift is now, they're like, oh, we got the spectators, we got the name, so we don't need to appeal to the spectators as much as because they're going to be there because we're Formula D. That's kind of I'm saying from the outside looking in, that's what the persona that shows me when I watch it because they really don't cater to the spectators. They have a car show, they have the stuff thing, but they don't really have anything else.
Uh-huh.
So, but a car show is, you know, they don't have they don't have nothing really for the spectators to do. excuse me. But, oh, you might have to edit that out.
Careful there.
Went down the wrong way. Maybe it's just somebody trying to tell me shut up. But anyhow, so there's a lot of downtime. The knob thing, I wasn't really feeling the whole knob. Now, I know that didn't affect the judging. But I really wasn't digging that because it was like it went up and it seemed like one judge was never using it because it was just going straight across.
Yeah.
So, but then what I did find interesting is that they used the point deduction scale.
All right. Let's backtrack a little bit. You brought up a lot of points. Let's talk about the graphics for a moment.
Yeah.
Because I have a couple of things to mention about that. One of the things that really like stood out to me like right off the bat, and of course Jerry pointed it out, was the use of the Stig for all the drivers.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't understand that. Did they get licensing? Can they do that? Or are they just saying, oh, we just took a picture of somebody that's dressed like the Stig? Okay, this is my thing. You've been around for 10 years, whatever. Why can't you have the picture? If you're going to use the technology, do it correctly. They were having the wrong names come up for the different runs. Oh, we got this person coming. Oh, wait, no, it's not. It's this. They did that several times. I don't even know. I can count how many times they put the wrong names up on the screen who was going down the track. And not having these guys' pictures, these guys have been – most of the drivers have been here for more than 2 years.
Yeah.
There's no reason they shouldn't have a picture up. Why are you throwing a Stig or – okay, you're going to throw the Garrett V800 thing or whatever. That's fine because it's – but this is not – people want to see the drivers. If you're going to show the picture, show the picture. Don't come up with something.
I think – now, of course, could be wrong, but I think what it is that they got so busy with all the extra graphics that they're incorporating that they're sort of like, oh, snap, we forgot about the driver photos.
Yeah, they took too much on.
Well, we'll take care of it the next time around, the next event.
Yeah, but see, that's – if you're going to use a technology, you're going to try to – make it look more professional. Like I was just telling you earlier about the X Games. Mm-hmm. When you watch the X Games, they have so much information, but it's done. It's correct. There's somebody that's making sure it's right. NASCAR does it. If you're going to use it, then do it right. There should be no, I don't know. That's not something that should be difficult to do.
No, I understand. And considering the fact of their position, how they're seen as the professional
right.
Drift series or professional sanctioning body.
I mean, they've been around for
10
years, 9 years, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
They should have it figured out by now.
Yeah. Hey, can you imagine a Formula One or NASCAR getting the names wrong? Or
no way, dude. I mean, 10 years you've been doing it, and it's you're screwing up stuff like that. That's just, well, you know, maybe it's being harsh, but okay, we're not talking about SWD or Drift Sessions or Drift Las Vegas. We're talking about the pro world international wide Formula Drift that is going to Australia now, apparently. And is around the world, you should be on top of the everything. There yeah. shouldn't be little mistakes. And that, and those aren't really little mistakes, because as a spectator watching that, you're just like, are you serious? But now they are doing the thing on Speed, or no, it's a ESPN.
NBC Sports.
NBC Sports. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that'll be done better. So
I hope.
You know, so I guess if you're considering that, okay, it's a live speed, they don't put too much attention into the live feed. And then maybe they're going to edit that in. So when they show that on NBC Sports, is what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm getting old.
No, that's fine. NBC Sports.
Yeah, NBC Sports. When they play it on there and then they have it all figured out then that's fine. You know, because the only people that are really watching live feed are the drift fans and supporters of the drivers for the most part. It's not really that publicized to watch the live feed for Formula Drift outside the drift community.
Yeah, but I think they got a little carried away with the graphics. Not just the graphics, but also the music, too.
Mm-hmm.
They got some...
What did they use music?
They got some, like, transitional... I could have said this. Like, transitional footage where it sort of kind of looks like some UFC title match kind of footage that cuts it in between, that shows you, like... round one or Long Beach or
replay. They're trying to do the UFC kind of like
Friday
Monday
night lights
football
or whatever.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Well, they're trying. So
they're trying, but I think it's
kind of corny.
A little bit too hard, though.
It's kind of corny, though.
It is.
So,
but I think they overused the music a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, on the first day, they use the same music every single time they will go into replay, and I just wanted to just turn down the music.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to put the mute, but of course, if I put mute on the stream, I'm not going to be able to hear the sounds or anything else of the cars. So,
yeah,
they got a little carried away. I don't think they need the music for the replays.
Yeah,
for the other things, I could see that happening, but
The technology is there. They just got to tweak it.
Well, and then the graphic. No, the other thing about the graphics is a lot of the things, like when they would display the graphics, it was like all over the place, and a lot of it was just hard to read. Like you mentioned that it would be great to have a ticker displaying the position of every driver, and they were displaying that, but it was like in a small little box, and they would only show up every so often. That you'd be like.
I really like the way the X Games had it. They had who's going up, what they're doing, and then it had like I said, the stocks. You know, when you see the stocks going across the screen, and they just had the skater because it was the X Games with their skating whatever, and then it was saying the points that they're at. And then you know,
well, they were doing that. They just didn't have the graphic running constantly.
But you know, at least they're trying. They are trying, and my only thing is that they are the pro circuit for drifting. They should be, if they're going to do it, they should do it just like any other pro racing event, like NASCAR or Formula One
or WRC.
Get it down first, because they can do that and mess around with that and not show us that. They can do like a whole, you know what I'm saying? And then they can tweak it before they actually display it for the public to see.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's whatever.
The other thing is, and not dealing with the graphics is they're not being, they need to be a little bit more careful with the microphone, because I don't know if you got to hear what happened, but during the live stream, Jared was doing promotional material, whatever, just talking about the sponsor GoPro and how he's like, you know, talking about the features and how it's like, oh, the HD camera is better, takes better video, and yada, yada. So go and check out the new GoPro 3, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And then right at the end of him explaining it, one guy, I think it was Steve, I don't know his last name or who that guy is in particular.
Okay.
But he says, oh, with half the battery life, quote unquote.
Well, yeah, but he's right, though.
Yeah, no.
He's totally right. It's like you – that's my – oh, go ahead. I'll let you go, but I totally agree with him. You have half the battery life and you get less stuff with the camera for a lot more.
No. To it as it may be, it's still, in a sense, putting down the
right.
Your main sponsor.
It's a derogatory. They should have not, as an organization being sponsored and being a sponsor, if they hear that, they're going to be like, yo, what are you doing?
Yeah, that freaked me out.
See how great it is, and at the end, it's like a little dig at the end, like, oh, but it really sucks. Don't buy it, you know? We're only saying this because they give us money. But we don't really like it. Almost. That's kind of how it comes across.
No, and it had the because not only did it have the chat box on one window, it actually had the chat for the live stream on right. another window. Mm-hmm. And it had everybody going crazy when that happened. They were like, oh, what was that again? What was that about the battery life?
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you got the chat box, any mistake you say,
it'll blow up pick on up your on face.
It. Yeah, they're going to throw it in your face and they're going to comment about it. Kind of like what we're doing now, but, you know, it's... It's true. You know, criticism is only going to make the event better.
Yeah.
If people don't complain about it, people don't point it out, they're not going to do anything to change it. So, like, when we do events, we always say, what do you guys think we can improve on? And you get the criticism. If you kind of want to get defensive about it, but you can't. You have to take the criticism, and you have to say, think about it and say, yeah, you know what, maybe they're right. So let's see what we can do to make that better. And it just makes the event better. So it's not like we're bashing Formula Drift, but these are things that we noticed and we feel they should work on.
No, for sure. It,
you know?
But
I do think it's interesting about the...
Half the battery life?
Yeah, that was good. But also the point deduction.
Oh, well, yeah, that talking about the judging.
Yeah.
For the most part, I was okay with the judging and the calls that they made. But definitely one of the things that stood out to me was... How Jerry was describing how, oh, the judges are working with a new system this time around, and they're actually going to be deducting points from 100.
Right.
Well, they're going to be starting out from 100, they're going to be deducting points for every mistake that they make from there. And I was like, huh, that sounds very...
I would just like to know if they got the idea from us or not, because I did talk to Andy Luck on Facebook a while ago, and I did explain our judging system to him.
Uh-huh.
Because I told him that we're working with the judging system. We've been working with it. Well, no, we've been doing it for a year now.
Yeah.
And it works out fairly well as long as you have the judges all keyed in on it and they understand what they're looking for. They still do a little different than we do because they still – I don't know if they – do they do 30 points, 30 points, 30 points, 10 points? Like, or is they just
– I don't know. They didn't really, maybe.
I mean, that's really the only way you can do it because you have three judges, 30 points, and you have the speed. But I don't know if they do the speed. Did they do the speed?
Yeah, it did the speed again.
So that's a 10 points all or nothing. The way we do it is you got three judges judging the run. Each judge is taking off points, whether it's lack of angle or corrections or whatnot. They just have style. I really don't get the style. How do you... judge style. How do you deduct points for style?
If you have a bad looking car.
That's an opinion. You know what I'm saying? It's like KP, KP for instance. He probably should have got zero.
Well, but that's your opinion.
No. I mean, I actually don't mind it so much, but there are a lot of people that just don't like his livery. Is that what you say?
Yes,
like,
yes.
His livery. But
well, that's their problem.
It was done very well. But see, that's what I'm saying. It's in there like Nick, the new guy, Nick, what's his last name?
Nick Ward.
Nick Ward from Atlanta came to us here. I spoke to somebody and they said, oh, I don't like the way his car looks. It's orange. I like the way it looks. So going back to style, how do you deduct points for style? Now, angle, but speed. Now, you got a speed gun, so... I guess speed through the track, but then you're not measuring the speed through the track. So some cars look faster than others, may not necessarily be faster than others. You know what I'm talking about? So how do you judge that? So that's why I think each judge should just deduct points on the whole thing. And I think every little correction, if you see the steering wheels go like they're just, the front wheels tweaking back and forth a lot, it really shouldn't be doing that. That's a lot of correction, a lot of steering correction they're doing to get on the track. Sure. So anyways, you know, that they're trying to do that, that works. That's a good idea. I think we should try that. Oh, wait, we do. We already do that.
Yeah. When I heard it, I was like, oh, let me call Tim.
Yeah, I know you called me, and it was interesting. I was like, are you kidding me? Well, whatever. I didn't watch qualifying anyways. But the day of the event, I think the biggest thing for me, even with the whole technology, whatever issues they're having with the wrong names and the no pictures, the track, the downtime, what was it, 3 hour break they took? That's a little excessive.
It's an hour and a half or two.
No, it was almost two. I felt like 3 hours because I think I went out and worked on the garage for a while. I went to go get something to eat, came back, and they still weren't started yet.
Well, they got to give time for the spectators to go check out the vendor village.
Do you have all day? But they're
drifting throughout most of the day, and the fans are going to be at the track, looking at the track. They're not going to be at the vendor village.
Nah, I don't know about that.
It's kind of like the swap shop over there.
Is it?
No, but I mean, sort of. If you go to the swap shop, you have people, you know, they set up the little booths, and people walk through it.
So, like, where's the bargains?
Exactly. At the swap shop or at Long Beach.
Yeah.
At the Formula D event.
Maybe. Maybe you're right. I don't know. We'll see when we go to Road Atlanta.
They got to give people a chance to try out the new GoPros with half the battery life.
That's true. And wait, well, the next podcast will be in 2 weeks, and then we're going to do another podcast from Road Atlanta during the road trip, correct?
I hope so, if we survive it.
If we survive. We'll survive.
Let's talk about some of the battles at Formula D.
Go for it.
And I think one of the ones that everybody was definitely talking about was Daigo versus Asbo.
Great battles. And you know what? I will have to say this year it seemed the judging was, at least so far, the first event was more on point when it came to tandem. I didn't have any discrepancy with any judge. Of course, I didn't see the final four guys go. I just couldn't. I had to go do something. So I missed the final battles. But whatever. But the Asbo and Saito, that was very hard-fought battles. Asbo was on his A-game that day.
Mm-hmm.
So, but unfortunately, he wasn't able to do the same thing against Dayushihara. But Dayushihara's car is freaking faster on that track.
Yeah.
So.
But Daigo was... That battle between Andrea, yeah, I have to agree with you in regards to those calls. And really, there's no driver that had the clear advantage.
No. No.
And it was only until Daigo's run.
Yeah, he kind of wobbled and his line was a little off.
Yeah, his line was off going into the last turn and then just caught that and they're like, oh, no, that's it. Asbo takes it.
Yeah, it was enough to give Asbo the win, and that was a good call. And from what I heard, that they were both having a blast. They were both very excited about the runs. I don't think Daigo was upset at all at his loss. I think that he knew he got beat, and it was a very hard-fought battle.
Well, there's no reason for him to complain. Asbo really pushed it, and it was very surprising to see him. In a way, yes. In a way, no. Because Asbo has always been a great driver.
Yes. In that car, too. I think he's... I was really hoping to see him to go to a different platform this year, but the car's running good, and Steph Papadakis has got that car dialed in on point, man.
Yeah, yeah. But just to see him side by side driving the way that Daigo would on a chase run,
mm-hmm.
And seeing that out of Asbo was just amazing to see it. It made for great photos. All the photos of them tandeming is just door to door.
That was the best battle of the event. Easily.
Definitely, for sure.
Easily. One thing, I know it's a little off subject, but I just want to point out, it was funny when we watched the first, when the top 32 went out and you saw Saito go against, what's the Miata? I forgot his name.
Danny George.
How small that car looked going against Saito.
Yeah.
That was like David and Goliath, but Goliath won this one.
Oh, for sure.
But
what frustrated me, it's actually quite funny you bring that up. What frustrated me about that was how long it took Danny George to pull up.
Yeah, what was up with that?
And I don't know. That's the thing. I really don't know. And competition's rules state that once the driver's lined up and the other, and your opponent isn't, that's it.
Oh, really?
If I recall correctly.
Oh,
and they were ready to start to disqualify him.
Right.
But they were like, "Oh no, he's trying to find his way over there and
trying to find his way." You've been practicing for 2-3 days and now you get lost.
No, he was plotting to figure out a way how to beat Daigo, but mm-hmm. unfortunately he couldn't, so he's like, "Ah, screw it, I'll figure something out."
Yeah. Now, what do you think of, you know, another thing, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, but this whole, and I forget what battle it was that I saw, I think it was Chelsea was going against somebody, and they used the pace cone.
The pace cone?
Yeah, but, you know, they go, and then they stop, and they're like, "Oh, he's taking off from me, blah, blah." And then this whole, we want them to be closer tandems, and, you know, the lead car has to slow up and wait for the slower car. What do you think about that? They were mentioning that.
Oh, they did? I didn't even know.
Yeah, they were saying that, "Oh, we got the pace cone. We were telling the lead drivers that we don't want you to drag race out the gate because we want the tandems to be better for the crowd and whatnot." I don't know if he was speaking directly for the judges or what they were going for or if it was just something that he was saying, but when I heard that, I was like, "Listen, if you got to go full out, you can't baby it and then throw off your entry."
I understand your point of view,
mm-hmm.
but I also understand from Madrid's point of view, where they pointed out and they've mentioned it several times that they want to make the event more exciting.
Well, maybe 3 hours of downtime isn't more exciting. Maybe work on that.
I don't know.
I mean, given
maybe they need the downtime to display the videos for the sponsors, to display commercials.
Oh, well, no, because they're going to have their own TV show. They don't need to do that.
But they need it for the track and the live stream.
Yeah, whatever. But anyways, that was one thing I noticed. And I think some people use that pace cone improperly.
Well, they're trying to make a more exciting show, sir.
Yeah, well.
And if it requires them to be not necessarily drag racing out of the hole and take off after the pace cone for closer tandems, then so be it.
Yeah, whatever. Then they should do rolling starts.
Hey, that's actually wouldn't be a bad idea.
Do a rolling start. Do a 35-mile-an-hour rolling start. They do that. That'll even it up. And then you still have the pace cone there, but you start a little further back, and you guys get up to 35 miles an hour, and at the pace cone, you go. That'll even it up. At least you get to go full throttle for entry. That makes more sense to me. But, you know, whatever.
Okay. Moving on, Gooden versus Gittin.
Gooden versus Gittin. Gooden had a good chase run, it seemed like. Really tried to get in a door, but shallow on the line.
Well, regardless of that, I think his battle with Gittin was actually some of the best driving that Pat has done in a while.
Definitely agree with that. Definitely agree with that.
It was definitely a whole lot better than last year, where last year Pat was having issues with his car.
Yeah.
And if I recall correctly, he didn't qualify, I don't think.
No, I don't think he did. I don't remember.
But this year, he actually qualified top 32. And unfortunately, he got knocked down in the first round of eliminations. Mm-hmm. But what was surprising to see was him being able to be door-to-door. He was right next to Von Gittin throughout mm-hmm. most of the way. And I was like, wow, it's a very promising car for him to be able to be right next to Von Gittin.
No, he did a good job. Definitely.
So,
I would like to see Jeremy Lowe out there, but you know, a lot of people are struggling with cash financially.
Yeah.
It's hard.
And, of course, we can't forget about Chelsea Denofa.
Chelsea Denofa. Yeah.
That was a surprise.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about last podcast, you know, who we thought was going to hopefuls in the winner, who we thought was you had asked me in the well, who we think is going to win. And I was like, well, you know, I would really root for Chelsea because this car, you know, of course, BMW and just him being a local guy, hometown Florida guy out there competing, I would definitely like to see him do it. He made it to the top four.
Yeah, that was the surprise.
So, and I didn't actually see his run. How did it go when he went to compete for third place?
You saw the battle with him against Dai, right?
No, I didn't.
No?
No, I didn't. That's what I'm saying. Once it got to... After the final four, I had to go. I had to take my son somewhere. So
You were like, I got better things to do.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't really remember much, but basically, Dai outdrove Chelsea.
Faster, right?
Pretty much. And then when he went up against Forsberg for the battle for third, and
well, he's not going to beat Forsberg unless he puts a DA sticker on his car, so.
And no, Chelsea struggled a bit going up against Forsberg, and it may or may not been the pressure or the fact that he was in the position that he was in, and there was a podium finish in sight.
Mm-hmm.
May have or may not have gotten to him, mm-hmm. But in any case, it was a very strong showing on his part, and definitely not something that we all expected. The funny thing is, he qualified fourth, and he finished in fourth.
Wow, that's good.
In only his second year, he's already in fourth, getting a fourth place finish.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the highest in his FD career,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully, it could lead to a podium finish sometime this year.
You know what, though, is interesting about what I like about Chelsea is that me and my brother were talking about that, and I think more drivers should do it. Chelsea could have gone pro sooner.
Oh, for sure.
But by sticking in the Pro-Am circuit, kind of dominating the Pro-Am, doing the XDC and doing these events, it better prepared them for Formula Drift.
Yeah.
So coming in as a rookie, tell you the truth, if Saito wasn't there, he definitely would have been – he might have got Rookie of the Year.
I think so.
You know what I'm saying? So, but Saito, another one. I mean, he's been drifting for so long. And I think a lot of these drivers like Nate Hamilton and a lot of these other guys shouldn't jump the gun and go pro so soon. I think because what's going to happen is they go out there and they start failing. It gets discouraging. You can't fund yourself. You can't do these events and you kind of burn yourself out prematurely.
Yeah.
So, what Chelsea did is a very smart thing. Sticking in the Pro-Am circuit, dominating, getting a lot more experience, a lot more competition, like real competition experience, and that better prepares you for these situations. I think this year he's going to do better. That's why I said last time we talked, when you said who's, I don't know if he's going to win, but he's definitely going to be, you know, in the next couple of years, he's definitely a contender. I see big things from this year, and even as it goes on, he's just going to get better and better and better. But I think more of the drivers should stay in the Pro-Am. And I see that also with County Line. I see a lot of drivers that are driving a skid pad, and they're not even connecting to the skid pad, and they're like, okay, we're going to do King County Line. I want a tandem. It's like, whoa, buddy.
I know who you're thinking about. I'm not going to say it, but I know exactly who you're thinking about.
There's a saying, was it the putting the carriage before the horse or something like that? You know, it's like you got to – walk before you run.
Yeah.
If you can't walk yet, you have no business running.
Yeah.
So, there's a few guys that are out there like, oh, you know, my car is all tandem ready to tech, or I can pass tandem tech and this and that. Yeah, that's great, but you're just not ready yet, and people are in a denial, or I don't know what it is, but I know with myself that it took me a while before I even wanted a tandem. I wasn't comfortable tandeming until I knew that I'd have no problem connecting the track. Then once that is done, then you go for it.
Yeah.
And then you push yourself.
You know what you said about Chelsea doing pro for doing Pro-Am for a while before moving on to the big leagues.
Right.
You're not the only one that actually pointed that out. I think if I recall correctly, Esty Falero, he pointed out in the chat box, he's like, oh, Chelsea did it right.
And I'm right.
Like, huh? It's like, Chelsea did it right by doing Pro-Am for such a long time that he got himself ready for Formula D, and he's not struggling so much as some of the other rookies have.
His car set up. He knows his car. He knows how he likes to set up. Because you know as a driver, okay, yeah, I'm connecting a track and I'm doing pretty good, but then you start out driving your car, and then – your driving style has to change a little bit when as you change your car as well. Mm-hmm. So as you change your car, your driving style changes, and it's got to evolve in a way, and you got to adapt. Chelsea worked all those bugs out. Like, he tried, he was in a Miata, and he was this, he was in that, and then he went to BMW, and then he stuck with BMW, and then he built the car around him. And I think that's why it was, maybe he didn't want to go with the RX-8, because he spent all that time tuning and fine-tuning the BMW. He was at home in it. And I guess I think that he knew if he really wanted to have a shot at winning and being competitive, he was just going to stick to what he knew.
But I think the reason why he wanted to go in with the RX-8 is that with the RX-8, he didn't have to worry about breaking anything.
Right.
For him, it was just sort of an arrive and drive.
Yeah, but then you fall into the Jun Meng syndrome, where you got this great car, but the car kind of holds you back. And now you're doing these events, and you're kind of like, man, you just show up and drive, and that's great. But if you want to win, you know, if you just want to drive to have sponsors and whatever, and if you don't win, who cares? But if you want to be competitive, it's gonna, and the car's gonna hold you back. That's gonna be frustrating. If you really want to be finish podiums and do good, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, careful there.
Yeah, no, get a little crazy.
Yeah. In any case, Formula Drift ended up with Dai Ishihara taking first place, Wang Yin getting second.
Yep.
Which unfortunately, Long Beach is not his track.
No,
it's been said many times before, and it happened again. Victory was in his sights, and he
was more conservative this time. Like, he did actually. It seemed like towards the end of last season that he would go all out, and then he would blow it. Like, he would push himself too far.
Yeah.
When he didn't need to. This time it's like when he went against Pat Gooden. He already knew that.
No,
he
Pat Mordaunt.
Pat Mordaunt, that's right. Pat Mordaunt. Man, it's Pat Gooden, Pat Mordaunt.
Don't worry. You weren't the only one that got confused.
Yeah. So, when he went against Pat Mordaunt, he knew he had to win, so he played it safe.
Oh, for sure.
So he's definitely playing it smarter this season.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, and that's good to see. So, you know, Von Gittin is, I mean, the guy's one of the greatest out there.
Yeah. So, Von Gittin took second, and Chris Forsberg took third place. Yeah. And now they're going to move on over to Road Atlanta, which should be interesting.
Yeah, definitely be interesting.
But so far, Formula D is, of course, with its faults, but for the most part, it's a pretty good show, I guess.
No, you know, it's the only show. Unfortunately, it really is. I mean, there really isn't much else out there for the general public to really see.
Yeah.
That they represent right now to the non-drifting community, to the young fans, the old fans, to the world. Formula Drift represents the drift culture.
Yeah, I guess.
Because that's what people are going to see.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to see the local events. They're not going to hear, like, the podcasts. They're not going to see the they'll
you
see
never
a little
know.
You never know. They'll see little TV shows here and there, you know, like, oh, this is drifting. Oh, okay, that was cool on local networks, which we've seen before. And but for the most part, the mainstream is Formula Drift, and that's what the general public is going to show. They're going to see, and that's what's going to build the fan base.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned a TV show. I was going to say something, but that's another topic for another time.
Yes.
Let's move on to more important matters. I think something that's even more important than Formula D, it's, of course, the King of County Line series.
That's right. King of County Line. King of County Line.
Yeah. We had our round one event last weekend.
Wasn't as painful as last year. I thought it wasn't as bad to watch.
Really?
The qualifying? Yeah, a little painful. But we were able to get a top 16. We actually had 17 people get scores.
Yeah, that was actually surprising.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I'm so glad you were so adamant about, are you sure? Because you were, like, putting into question for me wanting to have a top 32.
Yeah. You were like, oh, we're going to do a top 30. I'm like, sat with me in qualifying several times.
Last year, when we were making plans for this year, we're actually thinking about having top 32 eliminations.
Mm-hmm.
And you yourself, Tim, were
were very adamant about trying to get me to go back down to top 16 and right. not go for top 32. And thinking about it, all the points that you made, I was like, you make a very good point. So we'll go top 16. And it definitely ended up working out. We actually had about 31 drivers come out. Not so much, but just the average of what we expected.
Right.
I'm actually glad that it was about 30. It wasn't like last year where we had like 50.
No, because the more drivers, the harder it is to organize a competition. If you just do an open drift day practice, you just group one goes out, group two goes out, group one goes out until the day's gone.
Yeah.
There's not so much, drivers meeting to get a stop and do this, that. Thank God we didn't have any accidents.
We had an accident, yes.
Well, major accident. We didn't have any.
Yes.
We did? No, we didn't.
You're right. We didn't have any major accidents.
Nobody, creaming their car against the walls. We had some door defender benders. But for the most part, the event went flawless. There are some things that I need to work out on and some issues I need to address. But for the most part, the event went well. I really, really enjoyed being on the mic. That was fun.
You sure did.
Yeah, it was the first time I actually was able to. I think
you're very you definitely put an effort into it. You're like, I'm going up there with you. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Where is it? What? All right, fine. I don't care. I'm going up there.
Yeah, I wanted to. Because it's a lot of fun and doing the podcast.
I think you wanted to go up there because you wanted to give yourself sort of an escape. From your traditional role at the events.
Yes.
Because you're usually running the line or having to scream at somebody.
Yes.
At least from up there, you can scream at somebody from up there.
Yes.
And anybody else that... you realize that the microphone yields power.
It not only yields power, but what's good about it is the vantage point that you have up there.
Oh, for sure.
You could see everything, and I'm not locked into... Usually, I'm by the start line, and I can't see what's going on the track. This way I can – it's actually easier for me to delegate from there because, one, I could talk to the judges. I was able to get the speeds that were coming in from the start line and announce them because there were times where the judges – I can hear them because I had the judges in one ear and then I had another radio that for the track, Danny of the track. And there's certainly like he was telling me, hey, tell the guys to get off the wall. So I had two different things. And then of course my phone's always gone off, but I was able to help the judges hear what the start line was saying because they can't hear the radio too well. And just also be able to tell the line, hey, hold the line. Cause they can hear me from down there. And it was actually, like you said, it's people can hear it and it's a little more authority, I guess. And people listen.
Well, you took it by secret. See, I've known for a while that area up there provides some of the best viewing angles of the entire track.
It does.
And now that you're up there, it's like, damn it, he knows.
Yeah, no, it's a very, tell you the truth, I think the judges should be over there.
No.
I
it gets crowded up there.
Yeah, don't know it does. I mean, really, when we came, for those of you that don't know, we were standing at top of a, not a crate, but what are they
container.
A container, a Connex box. So... definitely good vantage point. I definitely enjoyed sharing the mic there with Ben. Actually, it seemed more like you were sharing the mic with me because I was up there talking on the mic more than you were.
I figured because you were taking the lead.
Yeah. Well, did I push you out of the way? Did I bully you out of your spot? I didn't really mean to.
No, it's fine. Oh. But it was quite funny though. Like when I would talk, and next thing you know, like you would get excited, and then you would like talk over me. I'm like, "Whoa, Timmy!
Yeah,
I haven't seen the side of you."
Yeah. Well, there were some exciting battles. There was very exciting. Anyways, going over County King County line, you want to talk over some of the battles? They're pretty.
Hold on. You're kind of fast forwarding ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting excited, just like the event.
You got to talk about the buildup, what happened, the graphics, and
the graphics. Yeah, well, the graphics, they weren't there.
Half the battery life. Yeah, you have to go through the whole process. So
okay, well, I'll let you set the scene. How about that?
All right, fine, I guess. It was hot, very hot.
It wasn't that bad.
It was hot, but
wait
the
until
other
June
thing,
30th. That is going to be hot.
Don't remind me. But the funny thing is, a lot of people were projecting that it was going to rain.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it looked like it rained a little bit on Friday. Saturday
kind of I think those scatter rain. Showers.
Scatter showers a little bit on Saturday, too. I saw some dark clouds. I'm like, oh, man. They actually didn't run the drag strip on Friday night because of rain.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually didn't end up raining. But anyways, so Sunday comes around. Beautiful day. There was a breeze. It was hot, but it was still a beautiful Florida day. Monday comes around. It freaking rained like crazy on Monday, at least right out here. So we really dodged a bullet on that one. And, you know, my biggest thing with doing these events, especially in the spring and summer, is I'm always saying, oh, my gosh, the rain, the rain, the rain. I don't even really want to do an event from May to, like, end of September. I really don't want to do an event because I just hate having to get rained out. It just sucks, you know?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't suck for some of the drivers. Actually, I remember Sean McQueen, he was hoping for rain because he didn't actually have a lot of tires to work with.
Sean McQueen, yeah, it's a shame what happened. But anyways. So,
Definitely it was a great day. Typical Florida day, yes. South Florida day. Great day to get a good tan.
Yep.
I felt like going to the beach. It was that kind of day.
It was. It was a beautiful day.
It was somewhat hot. Qualifying went away. Actually, during practice, I actually had to sit down and help out a couple of people.
Right.
Help out this kid with the Mustang, the Fox Body Mustang. Yeah. He was just going into the turn way too fast, way too aggressive.
Yeah.
I was like, buddy, you gotta tone it down a little bit, dial it down a bit. I got on it. I showed it. I showed him how it should be done.
Yeah, but that car has some issues still.
It has some issues. It is not the easiest car in the world to slide.
What about
it is scary.
Yeah. What about Pep, too? Pep with his...
Well, S2000? Unfortunately, he didn't get around to that. But finishing off with the Mustang, there's no friction in the steering wheel.
Right.
The rear end feels so unstable. Even if you like just adjust a little bit, the steering just a little bit, move it a little bit, it just wiggles like by itself. It like the steering, it felt kind of like a mid '90s F-150 with so much play.
Definitely, it's Ford.
I don't know. But that was just bad. But the great thing about it is I was actually able to do the entire track in third gear.
Yeah, well, you have the torque. That's the VA.
VA power. Yeah, actually, clutch kick in third gear. I was like, woo, I still got power.
the car has potential. You just got to work some of the bugs out.
Then you had this guy, which you just pointed out, Pep. One JC-powered Honda S2000.
Yeah, now he did do he put a 240 rack in there to get rid of the steering issues with that car. That car is notorious for. Now, I don't think his suspension is set up correctly. And have you driven that car yet?
Unfortunately not. And talking to the guy with the Mustang, unfortunately, I don't remember his name right now. They're both good friends. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to help Pep out, and he was like, no, I'll figure it out. And talking to the guy with the Mustang, he was telling me, like, he's just that kind of guy that he just wants to figure it out on his own.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it, but I think there is something wrong when you keep at it for the entire day and you have issues the entire day.
Well, he had issues at the skid pad, you know, so. But we'll see. We'll talk. You know, we'll have a skid pad tomorrow night. And maybe I'll offer him. Maybe he'll take it if, you know, maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable with you. Maybe he'll feel more comfortable with me. So I'll ask him if he wants some help. Maybe I can help him out.
Well, I have made people nervous before. So.
You do. You do make people nervous.
Which I guess is one of the things they got to work on.
Well,
whatever.
You can't control that. You got to be you, and they're just going to have to accept you the way you are.
Unfortunately, I can't. I can't be myself. Apparently, the true me is too mean on people. But whatever.
So we get through qualifying. We got our top 16. Number one qualifier in JJ Naco.
Yeah. Got first place.
Got first place with 100 points, which I wasn't really too happy with, but you know.
And on the other end of the spectrum, coming in at 16.
The founder of the KP Zone, established in 1998.
Kevin Phillips.
Yes. he visits his zone quite frequently.
Yes.
And I also heard his car did attack him at CFRC again.
You know about that?
That sucks.
Yes.
But yeah, hey, KP is KP. You love him, you hate him, You know, he is, but he does one thing well, and everybody knows who he is.
Of course.
So,
I pointed this out at the event, and he's exciting to watch.
He's exciting to watch on and off the track.
Yeah.
You know, whether you like him or not, it just, he's always part of the conversation, and maybe that's what he's going for.
And the other thing about him is that you never know what you're going to get with KP.
No, you don't. You don't.
You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if he's going to go off track. You don't know if he's going to go off-roading. You don't know if he's going to go autocrossing. You don't know if he's going to be drifting great. You just don't know. And it's sort of that
anticipation.
Yeah. That uncertainty that you're like, oh, what's going to happen with KP?
It's like a Russian roulette. Is there a bullet? Am I going to blow my brains out?
Exactly.
Or is this going to click?
Yes.
Usually blow your brains out.
I'm telling you, KP, he's, you know, for as crazy as he is, he's very exciting to watch.
And, oh, he is.
And as crazy as he is, he somehow got lucky and ended up in the 16th spot.
He did. Unfortunately, took himself out of the competition right away. But he didn't argue about it. He knew he did it. So that was easy because, you know, with KP, if he loses a battle, you better be sure you can tell him exactly why.
Or he's
got to be able to agree with you as well. This one, he knew he lost. He accepted it. There was no doubt about it. It was what it was, and he let it go. And I think that was the first time I think that I've seen that out of KP, at least for our competitions. So I was very impressed with him.
KP is the way to be.
Yes, KP. Well, no. So I don't really know the top 16 as far as the order, but we're going to go into the top 16 eliminations.
I should have brought the paper.
It's okay.
That was my bad. Yeah. Actually, no. No. Because I was thinking of maybe pulling it up on the website, but that's not going to help out either.
No, that's fine. We haven't posted up on SFL Drifters. If you look under the standings page, you'll see your score and your qualifying score.
Yeah, I'll put it up right quick.
Being the first round and the second round being at Sun Life Stadium is going to be interesting as well. We're going to have a couple new judges doing that one as well. So we'll see how that goes. Everybody looks like they're really excited for round two and the finals. There's definitely a very positive vibe about the King County Line this year, more so than I think has ever been at County Line among the drivers. There's more of a buzz this year about this series, about this competition that has got these drivers wanting more, demanding more of their cars, focusing more on their builds. Okay, yes, we're not a pro event, but we're something that the local guys can afford to compete in.
Mm-hmm.
And working with USDC, possibly bringing some sponsors in, is going to give these drivers a taste and a feel for the pro aspect of it. So the competition is going to be good, and you're going to see the majority of the same guys that you always do. You're going to see Bert. You're going to see Bill Fisher. You're going to see I was trying to hold that in. But you're going to see JJ. You're going to see all these guys going toe-to-toe this whole season. I think it's going to make it for an exciting season. Plus, we have an addition.
Yeah.
We have Nick Ward coming down from Atlanta. Hopefully, he's here to stay for a while. He's working for Torque, which is, I guess is a performance shop in Miami. And he brings his LS2-powered S14. Now, I'm going to go into this real quick because this is something that, you know, me and Ben have talked about. And I think anybody that ate dinner with us at Applebee's afterwards knows as well that we did have maybe a little miscommunication, or I wasn't informed of all the details being at the announcing booth. There was an issue when we got down to the top four. We had Bert Abalos, we had JJ Neko, you had Abraham Rivera, and Nick Ward. Now, getting word from the Lions saying we got a driver that he's got one more run on these tires before he has to change tires. You want to give him the time to change tires now or what? And I'm like, okay, yeah, let him get his tires changed now so he doesn't have to take 5 minutes later. At least this is what was going on. This was the process going on in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out that, unfortunately, James, he did a great job with running the line. He always does. He didn't really give me all the information, and I understand what he was trying to do, but when I talked to my brother was like, listen, he didn't want to change his tires because the other set of tires that he had weren't as wide. They were much narrow, and he really didn't want to go to them unless he absolutely had to. If I would have known that information, I would have never made him change tires because I kind of feel responsible. I feel bad because he ended up spinning, and it cost him third, second, or first place, whatever, because Nick Ward coming down here for his first event at County Line, he was driving a track like he's been driving for years.
Yeah.
He was attacking it. He never had an issue with it. So you're going to see big things from him. I see him doing very well. I know he's trying to compete in SWD. It would really be nice if I can talk to Ryan Sage or something. Maybe this year, since we already did start the series and we do have a series of events planned, maybe they'll give us the permission to do Formula D Pro licensing. That would be great. I think that would be a big asset to South Florida because really to do Pro-Am for South Florida drivers or even Central Florida drivers, the majority of the events are up in Georgia and Carolina, and that's expensive. And it's really not fair because a lot of the West Coast drivers just have to go to one venue and just drive the same venue over and over again. And
yeah, we mentioned that several times before.
Right. So, you know, definitely something I want to talk to Ryan Sage about. I don't see why not. We're organized. We have our stuff together. We got our judging system. They got our judging system. And, and you know, there's no reason. We got the quality of drivers. The drivers, they just can't afford to drive all around these places and continue to do Pro-Am year after year after year.
I think we need graphics. I think once we get the graphics, then we could be certified for licensing.
I think we'll have to work on that. So anyway, so going to top four, you know, Nick, if you do hear this, you know, I do apologize. It was a miscommunication or lack of communication, I guess you could say. But to all the drivers that are listening to this, if this something happens and you're wondering, just take the 5 minutes, you know, run on the tires and, you know, do the best you can. If you want to try to stretch those tires, don't tell anybody. Just do it. And then if you need to change tires, you call your 5 minutes, you change them, and then you keep going. But like with Abe Rivera, he ended up just barely having enough. He just had enough tires to make to the battle for first.
Yeah.
Which kind of was depressing because I was really expecting to see a good first, second battle, and it just ended up being a walk in the park for JJ.
Oh, for sure.
So, but now, is there anything else you want to talk about it before we go into the interviews, or you want to go into the interviews?
Not just yet.
Not just yet, okay.
I just wanted to first, well, before getting into the interviews, I want to mention, we already mentioned Nick Ward coming out. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention a completely stock Infiniti G35.
The grocery getter from who knows where. Where did he come from?
I don't know. There was this black G35 completely stock. I don't know. I just don't know. He just popped out of nowhere. And next thing you know, he qualified top 16.
Top 8. He got into the top 8 too, didn't he?
No. He got knocked out by Nick in the first round, if I recall correctly. Yeah,
that's right. No, he got knocked out by I thought it was a grade 8 that he got knocked out. No, because Nick Ward took out Jerry Warren.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, but still, he qualified top 16, and here he is. Bone stock, G35, two-door, ripping it. I mean, it's not even that his run was bad. He had a good run against Nick Ward. It's just Nick Ward just outperformed as far as overall style, I guess you could say, and just aggressiveness and smoke. You know, he just...
I guess that's how they judge style.
I guess so, but how do you... Anyways, so... Yeah, I retract my former statement. But for the most part, the guy did it really good. I really...
Yeah, I wasn't expecting much. I was like, oh, black G35. He'll probably go off. Yeah, go off track a couple of times.
No, apparently, though, I was talking to Nick Ward, and he said that guy went out to PBIR and practiced the night before because Tertek had a Midnight Madness practice day drifting up the night before. So he said the guy was doing great up there, too. So I don't know where he came from. Parts unknown.
Seriously, this guy just looked like he just got the car.
It looked like he just got out of movie theater and was like, hey, there's a drift event. Why don't I compete? I got to go to the store after this. But, you know.
I got time to kill.
I got time to kill. But then he's making top 16. And maybe it took a little longer. He might have gotten in trouble.
Maybe.
His wife was expecting those eggs.
Oh,
boy. Now they're all broke.
But I before getting into the interviews, I also wanted to point out Eric Coughlin.
Oh yes,
Eric Coughlin. He's a
tenacious one.
No, not just that. I sort of know him on a more personal level since I had to deal with him.
You're not when the I play one with had to deal with him.
Well, I had to deal with him when I play on Forza on Xbox. Mm. And he's just one of the most annoying people to deal with. But okay. But the way how I see him is sort of like the way how a lot of people who I try to make them see me as, but it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how you point out, like, oh, yeah, you're mean to people, but you're not, those aren't your real intentions.
Right.
Well, I see that with him. Yeah, he's annoying and
brash.
Yeah.
This is the word, brash.
I guess.
Very,
and
rough around the edges.
Yes.
A no-nonsense kind of guy.
I know deep, you know, inside, Eric means well, and that's why I try to see that in him. As much as he annoys me, I try to see that in him, so that way I could let it slide most of the things that he does.
Yeah, well, the thing is like, you're transparent. Like, Eric Coughlin doesn't hold anything back. If it's going on in his head, it's coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of how you are, too. You watch the people drive. You're just like, oh, my gosh, you guys are failing. You suck. You know, if you're not being, that's just what's going on in your head. You're transparent. And there's nothing wrong with that. And today, people just, they want their egos stroked. And they, you know, you gotta hold everything in. You don't want to offend anybody. You know, some people need to be told how it is. Now, you don't need to go up and say, hey, you suck. You should stop drifting. But, you know, it's that look in your face when you're just like, oh, my gosh, this is just miserable, you know?
It's a Captain Picard face bomb.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So, but anyhow.
Eric Coughlin, craziest tandems at the event.
Definitely. When he went against Rodolfo.
Rodolfo Estevez.
Oh, he just bullied him. He bullied him.
We have Eric Coughlin in his 2J-powered Nissan 240SX.
First goes on, he goes on a lead run was first. He was leading first.
Yeah, he was going up against Rodolfo Estevez in a stock KA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a stock, but still, it was an NAKA 240SX. They go into the first turn, and Eric just completely just screws it up.
Yeah.
But
Rodolfo screwed up too, though.
Yes. But the thing is, when Eric screwed up into the first turn, he spun out.
Right.
And he tried to, power through to sort of, like, push his car out of the way.
And it looked like somebody threw bananas on the track. And it was an episode of Mario Kart. They both were just doing 360.
No, seriously. It was just like that. A very, very good metaphor, I guess.
Yeah.
Sir.
Oh, yeah.
Very, that was a very great picture that you pointed.
There you go.
And yeah, that's what happened. Rodolfo just went into it. He caught it too late. He spun out. He went into it way too fast. And it was just, I don't even know what the heck happened. But basically, the back right of Eric's car ended up hitting the passenger side of Rodolfo's car.
Well, but Rodolfo was in the chase position. So whether... It's almost like a Jonathan scenario. Just because you spin out doesn't give you permission to hit the other driver. So even...
Wait, Bowerman?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's, you know...
You have to say Bowerman.
I will destroy you. If you... Rodolfo Bowered. Jonathan Bowered. Eric Coughlin. You know, Eric Coughlin spin, but you still got to control your car and not hit the other driver. So that was... The incidental hit wasn't Eric Coughlin's fault. It's not his fault he spun. Well, I mean, it is his fault he spun, but that doesn't give you permission to hit him.
True.
So going into the second...
switching sides, alternating order. Eric Coughlin obviously at a clear disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Rodolfo was sustaining massive damage on his passenger door.
Oh, yeah.
From what I heard, his mom was furious at Eric about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's...
And I was like, well, it comes with the territory. That's drifting for you.
Yep.
So... I was like, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And I think nobody expected
what
was going to happen.
Not at all.
Eric Hoglund just gambled. It was a huge gamble on his part.
Gambled. I mean, it was just like, but we've known this about Eric Hoglund. He will enter into your door. So you better be going. You better not let off, because he's going to be on your freaking door the whole way around. And he's going to try to pass you. If you give him an inch, he's going to make a foot out of it.
And that's exactly what happened.
Right.
Going into the first turn, Rodolfo in the front, mm-hmm. Eric Hoglund in the back. They're both into it, literally inches apart. It was like looking at a Formula D event.
Very much so.
And, Eric Hoglund putting the pressure on Rodolfo. Rodolfo mm-hmm. ends up going off track. Yeah. And I think part of the reason was is that
he was afraid to hit.
He had that turbo on that 2J just blowing at Rodolfo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just spooked him and it just like threw him off.
Yeah.
And just looking at it from my perspective, I was like, okay, I think at this point you will let off. Yeah. No, Eric just kept going at it.
Eric did not give him an inch.
And Rodolfo goes off track, but then he's coming back on.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric is still going at it, and they just inches apart from one another.
And then didn't they do one more time after that?
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That gamble that Eric did paid off huge. It gave him the one more time. And again, we're thinking, oh no, like Eric, you know, he'll let off a little bit.
Yeah.
No, he went and passed Rodolfo again.
Yeah, and then ended up taking the win.
In that battle, right.
It gave him the win and he advanced in that round. So it was a really, some really hard fought battles.
No.
Some surprises.
And that wasn't over with Eric.
No, that wasn't Eric. Now Eric goes against Bert Abalos.
Yes.
And what I thought, it was funny because I didn't find out till after what exactly happened. So here we go. We got Bert leading on his first lap, Eric Hoglund in the chase role. And here they go, Eric Hoglund right into Bert's door. If you've been on Bert's Facebook page, you'll actually see the video when Bert enters. Now, Bert did say he was on used tires or something, so he wasn't as fast as he normally is. And you just see Eric Hoglund, boom, right on entry, right into his door. And that was really uncalled for. See, I thought the judges disqualified him. I think they did, but what I found out later is Eric actually just disqualified himself.
Yeah.
He pulled himself out. So whether the judges would have disqualified him or not, he pulled himself out. He realized that he's going too much. I guess he was getting too excited.
Something happened with his turbo. Like, it was, like, smoking really bad, and he just decided to go back.
So it had nothing to do with being the aggressive.
Eric Hoglund, no.
Yeah, going into... So he
was having mechanical issues, and he decided to just pull himself out.
Well, that being said, you know, Bert goes on a second run, just does a parade lap, and advances.
Yeah.
So Eric Hoglund taken out by his car, taking out other people, slamming doors, all kinds of stuff.
As crazy as that was exciting to watch.
Oh, it was very exciting. The crowd loved it.
I was just amazed. My jaw dropped. I was like, oh, my God. Teenage girl. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I was all giddy about it. Seriously. Yeah.
Like a little schoolgirl.
I was amazed.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Sorry about that. I get a little carried away.
Yeah. So, anyways, we get to the top four, and then we have Bert Abalos and Abraham Affair, which we kind of already went over before, and ended up being a good round of battles, except for the first and second place. I wish Abe would have had more tires. I think it would have definitely made it a better battle. But, you know, it's drifting. You really never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely for sure.
So I guess.
But it was a great event, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the drivers seem to agree.
Yeah.
I actually had the opportunity to go ahead and interview the winners of the event, mm-hmm. JJ, Abraham, and Bert. Mm-hmm. And I'll just play it all back to back.
Okay, well, I guess we'll start with Bert, start with third, and work your way up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead. And this is how the interview went.
All right, so I'm here with Bert Abalos. He finished in third place at the first round of the King & Countline Series. Bert, tell us, how do you feel coming into the first round?
Pretty good. I feel pretty good.
What happened exactly? You were actually battling, you battled against. Who was it against you battled for in the first round of eliminations in the semifinals?
I was against Bill Fisher, Stinger.
Okay. Okay.
And, well, he did pretty good today, but he wasn't driving his car. He was driving another car, and he was kind of a little bit slow. And he's having a technical problem a little bit. And
yeah, I got to say, it was definitely an interesting turn of events. The last time you guys met together, it was in the final round of the King & Conley Series last year. And when you were going up against him, you ended up going off track because you wanted to avoid hitting him. And now this time around, the tables have turned where Bill Stinger actually went off track going up against you. So it's definitely something different to see. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting him to do that. And he was leading, and I was chasing him, and all of a sudden he messed up, and I guess he went off-road, and I just kept going after that.
So when you went up against the battle, when you went up against for the battle for third place, you went up against a newcomer to the South Florida scene, and that's actually, it was Nick from Atlanta, definitely a promising driver. We saw some a pro level kind of drifting. Did that sort of faze you in any way, or did he just take it like any other competitor?
Well, it was just not a competitor, but I was expecting more of him, but he told me that he was running a skinnier tire in the back, so he wasn't catching that much grip, and I was able to keep up with him.
Well, that's good. Any differences with the car this year? It looks for the most part the same to me, but maybe you've made some changes under the hood that you haven't told anybody about. Care to share?
Well, the car is still the same setup. I've been running it for about 3 years now, and nothing changed to it. Still the same. It's just today I was just running low-grade tires, and I wasn't catching enough grip, and I was still all over the place. But it turned out pretty good.
Well, any other final words that you'd like to say? Any sponsors that you'd like to thank?
I have no sponsors right now, and hopefully soon I might have them, but today just have fun and keep drifting, I guess.
All right. And are we going to see you in the second round of the King & Conley Series happening at the USCC Sun Life?
Yes, I'll be there.
All right, Bird, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'm here with Abraham Rivera, who happened to have finished in second place of the first round of the King & Conley Series. Abraham, what do you think of the event today?
The event was amazing. It turned out great. A lot of people came out, and it was some very good competition out there. So a lot of fun, some tight tandems. It was extremely enjoyable. I had a blast, probably the most fun I've had in any event.
Well, that's very good to hear. But into a little bit more serious matters, I'm actually quite concerned because I saw you around the track limping, and I was like, well, what happened there? And I was like, oh, wait, he drives a KA Power 240, so I'm sure it was clutch kicking and broke his foot somehow, and that comes with the territory. But now I come to find out it's a different story. Tell us. Tell us what happened.
Well, I could see how you would jump to the conclusion, being that it's a KA and all, but I was out playing soccer one night over a week ago, and I just put it completely sideways, so it's nice and swollen right now, but I mean, with the adrenaline pumping of all the action, I can barely feel it, and you know, some drugs don't help either, don't hurt either, you know. It was good. I got some, what was it, I got some Motrin 800 in there. It was all good, but I managed to just get through the pain and just get some good runs, man. It felt good all day, so I'm just glad it all turned out good.
Now, it was a while until you got to the finals. Actually, before that, did you actually think you were going to end up in the finals?
Well, I mean, that's a complicated story. I mean, my car, as you know, is a stock KA. It's not even turbo, no nothing. But the motor is amazingly making some power, more than a normal stock KA should. So I was definitely looking to be in the top five. That's what I was going for. When I took out that LS powered S14, I was very amazed. The car was running excellent. That car's been running for years, man. I don't even know how. I give all the glory to God. I think he keeps that thing running, man. But it was just amazing. It was just pulling strong all day long.
You know what I find amazing is not only did he go up against a higher powered car like that LS powered 240SX, but also he went up against Esty Falero, who everybody knows around here in South Florida as to be one of the top drivers, and it was just crazy. I would be going pretty nuts knowing that I'd be going up against Esty Falero. How did you feel about that?
Oh, man. The nerves were definitely there. I mean, once I heard I was going to be paired up against him, I'm like, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen, you know? I'll just go out there, put it all against the wall, give it everything I got. And, I mean, the first run was really tight. He was really on me, really good. And then we came out, stayed close to him. I saw he was getting a lot of angle on the second left, and I guess he didn't have enough angle and on the for the turning radius, and he just spun it, pulled the e-brake so I wouldn't hit him, and thank God I didn't. But it was an amazing battle. It was a lot of fun.
So what happened at the final battle? Actually, you were, if I recall correctly, out front, and next thing you know, your tire just completely obliterated on itself going into the first turn. You decide to just, you know, stick with the tires, or was it just a weird coincidence?
Oh, no, it wasn't weird. I knew the tires were already gone. I mean, I couldn't get any traction second or third, so I was babying it off the line. I could barely get on the gas, and that's when I knew, you know, the tires are about to go. So I just put it hard, and whatever happened, went into the initiated hard, and they just went, man. They fell apart, but it was awesome. You know, the crowd loved it, so it was awesome. I knew, I was just hoping, you know, they would last for that last run, but they just came apart. I didn't have any more tires. I couldn't come back for any more, so that's how it turned out. That's drifting, right?
So is there anybody you'd like to thank?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I'd like to thank God. He's the one that really put all this together. He's the one that's giving me the talent, and he's the one that really makes that car function, for real. Secondly, I'd like to thank my parents, because it's not easy. It's not easy being my parents. All I have to do to the car, all my money's going to the car, and they support me 100%. They understand that this is what I want to do, that this is where I want to grow and eventually seek as a career. So they're extremely supportive. I also like to thank my extremely small pit crew. Actually, today it was a one-man pit crew. I had my friend Carlos. He was helping me out with the tire changes, whatever the car needed, feeling out the car, giving me some advice. It was those three groups of people I want to thank. They're the ones that really keep me going. Without them, this is impossible. I would not be able to do it.
All right, Abraham. Well, thank you for your time, and good luck to you for the rest of the King Kong Line series.
Thank you, Ben. It was awesome, man. Thank you very much.
All right, so I'm here with the first place finisher, I guess you could say, of the first round of the King Kong Line series, JJ Nako, representing BAM West Palm Beach and Street Legal Media. Stoke USA, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. That's us.
So how many sponsors do you have so far? And actually, let's go ahead and just call it out. Who do you have to thank?
I have to thank My Culture Clothing, StokeUSA.com, Street Legal Media for posting everything and keeping everything up to date. And I think that's it.
Okay. Now, did you expect to finish where you finished today?
No, I did not. Oh, and SMDG. But no, I did not.
Okay, so you were definitely surprised by your finish. Actually, at the beginning, it seemed a little sketchy. You were having some troubles getting yourself figured out onto the track layout, but eventually you got it going by the time that it came down to the competition. Was there any competitor that you went up against that you sort of had a little trouble where you were like, I sort of had to push a little bit more to sort of kind of like, you know, throw them off, well, you know, spill the beans. Come on now.
Bert made me poop my pants.
Now, why is that? Why Bert?
Just because I've been watching him drive for my whole drifting since I even started at, like, fairgrounds, and he's just awesome. He's a sick driver.
Yeah, and did you feel that it was going to be a hard battle because driver skill difference, or was it because you felt like your car wasn't going to be able to go up against that Toyota Corolla?
I just kind of thought my car wouldn't be able to handle the Corolla. My car is a lot slower.
Yeah.
Stock SR20, so with 2871. So it's, I mean, it's quick, but it's not that fast.
Yeah, I see you. I
yeah,
hear you.
It was amazing, especially driving behind him, and I don't know, it came all together real perfect. I'm amazed.
That's good. Now, what's your opinion about the track layout, the event itself? I mean, we've run this layout for some time now. It's definitely the preferred layout for competitions, and it's not often that you actually get to do this layout. What do you think?
I think that second left and the way that it's set up and where you guys had the clips this time was a lot better, because you didn't have to try and push a bunch of speed to the outside and then come back in and slow down. So that was a big plus. But other than that, this track is awesome. It's one of my favorite tracks, and I feel kind of at home here, even though I'm from West Palm Beach. But it's worth the drive every time, and Drift Sessions does a great job, and I love driving the King County Line Series. I really do. It's awesome.
Oh, that's good. Thank you for the kind words. Now, another thing, which I'm sure you weren't expecting, I definitely wasn't expecting, was the fact that you were the number one qualifier today, and now it came all of a sudden out of nowhere, because on the first run, you scored a zero. You ended up spinning out.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that put more pressure on you. And then on the second run, you did a phenomenal run that, you know, got you the first place finish in the qualifying. How do you feel about that?
More than ecstatic. I can't even believe it. It is amazing. When I spun out in the first qualifying run, I did a really good practice run, I thought. And then I spun out in the qualifying run, realized that my tires were getting pretty low. So on the third run, I just wanted to throw it in and hit the clips and try and just keep it together as long as I could. And I guess it was amazing. And then getting first place in qualifying, and then ended up making it to the event in first place. I don't know. I'm like, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I'm like, I don't know. My nerves are shot.
Is there anybody else you'd like to thank for today?
My whole crew. Stoke, My Culture, Slide Mission, everybody, DJ Matt, all you guys. I couldn't have done it without everybody's help and time and effort into this and helping me get to where I am. Doug and everybody, Street Legal Media, the whole Street Legal crew, I wouldn't have been able to do it without them.
That's good. And now, are we going to be seeing you at the next King Conline event?
Hell yeah, you're going to see me.
All right, JJ, thank you for your time.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was...
Yeah, you know, that was really cool to hear from all these guys, and definitely they all had a good time. You know, Bert, he's always a contender, but at least he got a little insight. He's definitely going to be around for round two, and that's good, so hopefully he'll have better tires. But I thought was kind of cool. Two things, I like Abraham Rivera. He's giving glory to God, which, you know, I'm very about that. I like that. Very
when he said that, I was like, Tim is going to like this.
I do. I like that. You know, it's something you don't hear in drifting, really.
No, for sure. Definitely not. You hear it in the Grammys and award shows and everything else like that.
And in NASCAR, because NASCAR, you know,
that's right.
They still do an opening prayer and bless the ceremony. And I think that's very cool.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. You know, I think this country is, you know, big on religion. And I think that's good to see somebody bring that in and let everybody know that that's part of their life. But anyhow, then you go to JJ Nako, and he seemed like he was getting a little choked up there, didn't it?
Yeah.
Was he emotional when you were talking to him?
No.
Oh, but it did. He was like, wow, you know, he's really...
Yeah, that was kind of odd.
Yeah, it was...
Especially playing it back, I was like...
Oh, shed a tear. It's like...
It sounds like it, but no.
I'd like to thank my parents.
Oh, come on, Timmy. Come on now. Come on. You're being a little harsh.
I'm just joking. I know I'm being harsh. I'm the bad guy.
Now you're being me.
No, but JJ knows I'm only joking with him. He could take a joke better than anybody. I love JJ. He's one of my favorite drivers to watch and just to deal with. It's funny. You have a driver's meeting. He's like, can we just drive? But the funny thing is when you're going through the events, he'll get out of the car and I'll go sit down. And he'll be like, JJ, you're up. What are you doing? He's like, oh, okay. He hops in his car. He's like, he goes flapping. He goes to sit down. I was like, JJ, you're always saying, hey, let's just drive. But then you're like, sitting down, get in the car. But no, JJ's a great asset for the South Florida, even though he's, you know, West Palm Beach, which isn't really considered South Florida, at least not in my book. So they're like the redheaded stepchild of drifting.
Yes,
as West Palm is. But
you know something?
They don't know if they're South. They don't know if they're Central. They don't know what they are.
Yes,
they're banned.
But you know something? We almost forgot to talk about somebody that's very important to the series.
Oh,
Bill Stinger.
Oh,
okay. We cannot forget about him.
No,
come on
can't
now.
Forget about, oh man, Bill Stinger comes out. His car is being ready to be shipped out, or was it already shipped out?
It's already in the waters.
Oh, it's in the water.
It set sail a long time ago,
so it's floating out in the ocean somewhere. Bill picks up this missile of a car and goes to compete. Funny thing is Bill. He's out there and he's sliding this KA car. It's just funny to watch him.
And even before it, you were there when we were in the pits and everything at the start of the event. He's like, hey, check out my new car. And he just floors it, and it's just bouncing off the rev limiter.
Yeah.
And he just holds it there for like a minute or two. I'm
like, okay, Bill, it's okay. We don't really want to hear it. He's all excited about it, you know. Unfortunately, just, you know, his car held him back in this one, you know. But he was still killing it.
Yeah,
he just didn't have what it needed to progress him through the competition.
Yeah,
he was taken out by Bert, which was interesting to point out when you're talking to Bert. Is the first last season they went against each other and Bert went off track, and this time on the rematch, Bill Stinger goes off track. So we'll be interesting to see their third time around. It's 1-1.
That's the thing about Kyle. Like, you never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't.
You have all these surprises. You have people coming out of nowhere.
Sean McQueen spinning.
Yes.
I think he was going against Abe Rivera, wasn't he?
I think so. I don't remember.
I think so. I think he ended up giving the win to Abe Rivera, and he spun on the exit. He would have had the win. Rodolfo or one of the two.
Talking about spinning, SC Falero, too. He spun going up against Abraham Rivera.
So I think Sean McQueen would have taken out Rodolfo. I think that's who he went up against, because Esty got taken out by Abe Rivera because they both made the grade eight.
Okay.
So.
No, but Rodolfo got knocked out by Eric.
Oh, yeah. What do I, you know, I don't have my facts straight.
Don't worry about it.
And I was there. That's a shame.
Maybe a greater force was on Abraham's side and was causing all these people to spin out.
It was, because it paved the path to get second.
And showed him the light.
It showed him the light. He took the narrow gate.
Oh.
So, anyhow, it was a good event. I'm looking forward to round two. Round two is definitely going to be a little much more complicated being at Sun Life Stadium.
And having Chris Jackson, world-famous Chris Jackson.
Oh, yes, world-famous Chris Jackson. we'll see. It's going to be a good event. There's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be a lot to do for the spectators. We're going to have much more than we did last time. And then you got round three and four, making for an exciting finals. I know that I think we're gonna have a really good 32 drivers. I really think it's gonna be a good finals.
Yeah, I hope so. Because I mean, so far it's working out with 16.
Yeah,
but I hope the finals doesn't end up having to be a top 16 battle.
Well, we'll deal with that when the time comes.
Oh, for sure.
So,
but in any case, anything else?
I have nothing.
Yeah, I'm pretty content.
Just keep posted, or we'll keep you posted, and get ready, drivers, for round two, June 30th at the Sun Life Stadium, and just keep coming out and getting practice at the track, practice at CFRC wherever you need, and just get on top of your game so we can see you guys some more fierce battles from South Florida.
Yes, indeed. We don't only want Eric Coughlin to be making contact.
We want all the battles to be that intense.
Yes, indeed. We want to see more passing.
Yes, we do.
In any case, thank you all for listening in to the SFL Drifters podcast. Again, I am your host, Captain Ben. Tim Murphy.
Good night. Good day.
Good
morning. Whenever you're listening to us, it's good.
Exactly. Great save. And we hope to catch you the next time. Adios.
Peace out. Ha ha.